Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this 25th of January, Tuesday. It's a big political day tonight, of course, the State of the Union. We're going to be covering that. If you tune us in tonight, you will hear the President's State of the Union address. You will also hear Congressman Paul Ryan, who, of course, is from Wisconsin, is giving the Republican response to the president's address. You will hear that. Michelle Norris will be moderating the coverage tonight, and that's at 8 o'clock. There will be a great deal of coverage, I'm sure, tomorrow of what you heard tonight. And we, tomorrow, during our 9 o'clock hour, will have as our guests David Frum, former speechwriter for President George W. Bush, from 9 to 9:30. And from 9:30 to 10, Don Gagne will be joining us, NPR's national political correspondent. The president, of course, is making his way to Wisconsin to give an address tomorrow and to meet with people and a company. So Don is going to be in Wisconsin with the president as well. Isn't it amazing how people can do that? They give State of the Union, get a little bit of sleep, go to Wisconsin. It's so rigorous. Just what a rigorous life. All right, we're going to be talking this hour of the program with the author, co-author of a really interesting book. The title is intriguing, Not Quite Adults, Why 20-somethings Are Choosing a Slower Path to Adulthood and Why It's Good for Everyone. In the introduction to the book, our guest writes that young adults once hit the road on a clearly marked path. The first stop was college, some training or the military. Next up was a job, marriage followed, and then children. Between marriage and kids, the new family bought a home. All of this was accomplished by age 25, and often in that order. Well, that's all changed. From the vantage point of parents and 18-year-olds today, this beeline to adulthood is unfathomable. Move out? Who can afford it? A college degree and a job by age 21? No way. Marriage and kids by 25, unheard of. Today, one half of those between 18 and 24 have not left their childhood bedrooms, let alone landed a job, married, or had children of their own. This is a 37% increase over 1970, and an even bigger jump in living at home has occurred for those ages 25 through 34, a 139% increase since 1970. Barbara Ray is the co-author of this book, and is owner of Hired Pen Incorporated, helping researchers and nonprofit organizations convey their work to broader audiences. She was the communications director for the MacArthur Research Network on Transitions to Adulthood, and she has held positions as a senior writer at the Joint Center for Poverty Research, as managing editor of the University of Chicago Press Journals Division. She was a travel writer and a culture reporter, and she is executive editor of the website Spotlight on Digital Media and Learning for the MacArthur Foundation. She also has a blog, and she says she is still not quite adult. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address, I would imagine we're going to have a lot of calls on this issue, is talk@wpr.org. Hi, Barbara. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Why did everything change?
Well, everything changed rapidly, too. And why it changed, I think it started with the economy. We shifted dramatically over the last 20 years from a making things to a knowledge economy. And so that means kids need more education to get a good job. And that is one of the key reasons the path to adulthood has slowed down, is this demand for more education to get on a more secure path.
And I guess we can't state often enough, so state it as often as you'd like, how important that education is now, how important it is to finding work in your life, to finding your path.
Absolutely. It's critical for, you know, getting a good job, which means a good paying job with benefits and some semblance of security, although that's even iffy in this day and age. But it's education is just the linchpin to success in many facets of life. And surprisingly, what we found in our research was that the kids who really try to rush into adulthood like their parents may have often do so by skipping that first critical step of education, and then that really sets them on a course that is much more precarious. And you can dig a deep hole these days pretty quickly, and it's much harder to get out. And much of the reason for that is because if you don't have a good solid base of education, and this doesn't necessarily mean a BA, it can be, you know, training at community college or a certificate or just some kind of training after high school. If you don't have that, your options really, the doors slam shut.
Mm-hmm. When you look at what's happened, too, does it also indicate that young people, I can remember bouncing around from idea to idea and always able to find some kind of job that would tide me over as I sampled the world and went to visit the world, and it could move pretty freely all over the place when I graduated from college. Is this demanding, this new economic reality, that young people decide what training they're going to get, what field they're going to enter shortly after they get out of high school?
Well, it certainly helps to have a clearer path, and we don't do a very good job of showing paths to kids, beyond go to college. And so, yes, you know, when I was young too, I also took kind of a meandering path, and it seemed that it was more accommodating to a meandering path back in the 80s and before, because first of all, cost of living wasn't quite as high. The price of an apartment was much cheaper. You could just get by on much less than you can today.
Right.
And things like jobs paid better, you know, wages for those with just a high school degree have just plummeted over the course of 30 years, even adjusting for inflation. So, you know, it was easier just to kind of find your way before. Now you just have to be much more strategic and much more strategic earlier in life. And that's where living at home and taking a slower path starts to pay off, because you have that space and time to figure out what it is you want to do, how to get there, and start to get the credentials that allow you to get on that path.
Mm-hmm. You write, you interview people, and you also write about the huge number, I had no idea it was this large, of young people who are in school, in college, 5 to 6 years, who drop out, who don't finish even after that amount of time, or who drop out before that. It's a very large dropout rate.
Yes, upwards of 40%.
Goodness.
Yeah, that's a clear sign that we're not, that something is amiss. You know, if that many kids are dropping out of college, 4-year college is not a good fit for everyone, clearly. There's issues of preparation. Some kids just aren't prepared for that kind of work that is expected at the college level. But a lot of kids are just not, really don't know what they want to do yet. So, but they've heard the message of go to college. So they go to college, but then they get there and they flounder, and they maybe change their major, and they, you know, they're just really struggling, and often they drop out. And that, we find is one of the most expensive mistakes you can make, is to drop out, because you drop out, but you still have debt in this day and age. So that starts to set you back on that path quite rapidly. And, you know, I do think that there are other alternatives to a 4-year degree, and we discuss them in the book, but we don't, as a society, we don't talk too much about those other paths for young adults. And I think that's a problem.
Right. I think it's a problem as well. And you also write about the number of people who aren't hired at high schools to do the kind of guidance counseling, career counseling, think about these kinds of jobs that are associated with what your interests are. Those people are just tremendously overworked.
Oh, terribly. The caseload for a counselor is enormous, and the expectations of what they have to do, the race to get into good schools, the pressure that kids feel to get into a good college, and is enormous. And in the middle tier schools that aren't, you know, those elite schools, the path into work or into a career that's going to be supportive. It's just, you know, we're not, like I said, we're not doing a good job of showing those paths. There are some good examples out there that there's some programs that are starting up that have been working that are showing promise. And one is a career academy, they call it, and it's a high school that is focused on, offers different curriculums that are job-based. So they might be culinary arts, or they might be nursing, or these very practical middle-tier jobs. And they combine the academics, math, English, science, but they relate those academics to the career itself. So kids see that connection of what they're learning in the classroom and how it's going to help them in the workforce. They do job shadowing. They're, you know, it's a very clear and direct path from school to work. And it's shown great success. So I think, you know, more of that is needed to help kids find their path.
Right. I don't think that many of us have an idea. If you have an interest in this, then you might be able to find a career in this area. There are lots and lots of jobs that we simply don't know very much about.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And at age 18, 19, 20, you're even less, you know, you're even less clued into what's out there. So mentorships and job shadowing and just getting exposed to the work world in ways that open your eyes to possibilities would be a great help to many kids.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the role of parents here. There's been, as you well know, a lot of debate about parents who have micromanaged their children's lives and put enormous pressure on them to get into the right schools and make sure that they're taking, you know, pre-SAT prep things when they're in seventh grade or even earlier than that. What is the role of parents in helping guide young people through their education and into a world of work?
It's quite important. You know, we hear a lot about helicopter parents, those parents that hover over their kids too much. And, you know, we just didn't find that many hovering parents. Sure, there are examples. There's always an example or two. But on the whole, we didn't find that many hovering parents. We found involved parents. And we also found that kids who have involved parents do much better, certainly in college, and by extension, earlier in life, getting on those first steps into a secure future. You know, I think the conversation we should be having is one that we should be more concerned about uninvolved parents than mm-hmm. over-involved parents.
Mm-hmm. And, well, let's talk about those parents for a while, because if you don't have involved parents and you have students who don't know which way it is they ought to be going and they're not getting career counseling, et cetera, are we approaching a society where we have those who are really treading water and those who are swimming and it's not quite mm-hmm. fair?
Yeah, we're not approaching it. We're there. Mm. You know, the majority of the kids we interviewed were treading water, seriously stuck early in life, in an important decade, because not because their parents didn't give them, you know, necessary guidance, but because the stakes have changed. The world is highly competitive now, and it's not just you know, here in this country. It's a global economy, and so we're competing against other countries at the same time. So the stakes have gotten higher for everything across the board, and parents who are there to help their kids, to guide them, to point them in the direction, to give them advice, to even give them a landing space at home to take some time and, you know, figure out what they want to do or save some money or pay down that college debt. They're providing a critical resource to their kids. And, you know, parents have always been important in children's lives in helping them develop through young adulthood or through youth and adolescence. And now that role is continuing into the 20s. I guess it's not surprising if you think about how the world has changed so dramatically.
Mm-hmm. So how do we care for those who don't have that involvement from parents?
Yeah, I think we can do more at the community level with mentors and with organizations that help guide kids. You know, there's a lot of after-school programs, if you think about it, for youth in high school. Maybe we need something like that for kids in their 20s, where it's not just to hang out, but where there's solid job advice, where there's career counseling, where there's some, you know, business people who can be on hand to give advice on how to get started and what their companies are looking for. You know, maybe just some more support during this time of life.
Mm-hmm.
Because the 20s are a really critical decade. If you think about it, we make some very important decisions in our 20s. We decide what we're going to do in our life for work. We often choose our partner. We start a family. You know, those are big decisions, and I think it always helps to have advice.
And what's happening with those other big decisions, family and marriage and all of that? Are young people doing that now in their 20s, or is that age being pushed up pretty dramatically?
Yeah, young adults are delaying marriage into their late 20s, early 30s. That's a very clear trend. I think for the first time, more people in their 20s are unmarried than married. So that is clearly, marriage is clearly being postponed. It's not being abandoned, but young adults are trying to get all their ducks in a row first. They feel that they're taking marriage very seriously. Part of this is they're children of divorce, so they're a little skittish and they want to do it right. And then, you know, it takes longer to get all those ducks in a row. And so they really look at marriage as a capstone to a successful start. And so because that start is slower, marriage is postponed. We do see an interesting divide between elite kids who we consider, you know, have a four-year degree or more, and kids who have less education. The latter group is marrying sooner, but those marriages aren't as solid or as long-lasting as marriages that are delayed.
What do you think of taking on debt, student debt?
Well, I think taking on student debt is one of the best investments you'll make in your life. I mean, in this economy, it's a necessity. I think we too often look at the short term, you know, the pain of that paying down that debt, and when in fact we should be looking ahead, maybe 10 years, to the long term payoff that debt will, that college education will continue to pay. That said, I think college is getting extremely expensive, and there's no doubt about that, and maybe too expensive. We have to think long and hard about the cost of education in this country. But, you know, as one of the economists on our network says, well, don't get a degree and see where it lands you. You know, you have to have the education to get move forward, and it is a good investment. Now, to be strategic about it, though, you really have to think about what it is you're going to do in life. If you want to be a teacher or a social worker or some other valuable but low-paid position, you don't necessarily need to go to Harvard or Northwestern, you know, the Ivy League, to get that degree, because that's going to be an expensive degree and your salary just won't compensate for that. So I think kids have to be very strategic in their choices of schools and be honest with what it is they're going to earn when they get out so that they can pay down that debt in a reasonable time frame.
We have many people who would like to speak with you, and we'll go to them momentarily. Barbara Ray is our guest this hour. She is co-author of Not Quite Adults, Why 20-somethings Are Choosing a Slower Path to Adulthood and Why It's Good for Everyone. We have one line open if you'd like to join our conversation. Here's the number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email address, feel free to use that, is talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. A reminder that tonight we will be carrying the President's State of the Union address. Michelle Norris will be joined by NPR correspondents for analysis. And also you'll be hearing the Republican response from Congressman Paul Ryan. So that is tonight, and it is at 8 o'clock here on the Ideas Network. We'll have reaction from many talk shows tomorrow. Ours will be from 9 to 9:30 tomorrow morning. David Frum, former speechwriter for President George W. Bush, From 9:30 until 10, Don Gagne will join us, NPR's national political correspondent. So we invite you to watch and listen and join us tomorrow for analysis. We go to phone calls now, 800-486-8655. Mike from Milwaukee is our first caller. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I hope I don't get cut off today, and please let me finish.
Well, why don't you start?
I called yesterday when you talked about education. This relates to young people today. Young people today are not choosing to do this. They're forced to do this because they can't find jobs. Yesterday, I commented about a college education being no guarantee to finding a good job. I have a son-in-law who's a chemical engineering graduate from Ohio State University. There were 110 Ohio State chemical engineering grads in his class 2 years ago. 50% of them could not find jobs, okay? My son-in-law was fortunate. He found a job. My daughter has a master's degree in education from Ohio State. She found a job. Other master's degree education graduates of Ohio State did not find jobs. Your guest yesterday said, glibly, a college degree, there's only 5% unemployment. Yeah, I suppose if you're a chemical engineering graduate working at Starbucks, you're employed. But is that really commensurate with your ability? We have a fundamental problem in this country. It's the loss of manufacturing. We've given away jobs with our trade agreements. I live in South Milwaukee where there's Desire Theory, which is touted as a success. There are 1,600 employees at Desire Theory now. In the 1960s, there were 6,000. Until we get real and address the loss of manufacturing jobs in this country, the whole country is not going to get better.
Barbara.
Well, he makes a couple good points there. There is huge underemployment right now for college, even for college grads, and that's because of the recession. I mean, you know, this is a deep recession, and it has hit young adults very hard. There's no doubt about that. I tend to agree with his point about the loss of manufacturing, stripping us of well-paid middle-class jobs. I don't know enough about that debate to comment on it in any intelligent way. But I will say that I do know that young adults are beginning to question whether a college degree is still worth it. And they're questioning it because they are getting out of college and they are finding that they don't have any jobs. And they're disillusioned because they've played by the rules and gotten that degree and then, what do they get for it? They get debt, but no job, and they work at Starbucks, while they're trying to find a job. The only consolation I can give them is that, it will pay off in the long run. Like the caller said yesterday, those down the ranks without education are suffering even more. I mean, they are really suffering. College grads are taking the jobs that they used to get at Starbucks and these retail places and other lower paid jobs, where they're going. They're going nowhere. So I know that's not much of a consolation, but I guess when we do pull out of this recession, that college degree, especially in chemical engineering, will definitely pay off in the long run. I think sometimes like I said before, we have to look at this as a long-term investment. It's you're investing in your future when you invest in education. And so, I know it's painful right now, but I think in the end we will recover and those college grads with a chemical engineering degree will land jobs.
Thank you, Mike, for the call. Yeah, the economy is just awful. We have a huge unemployment rate, very, very high, so it's going to be hard for everybody, for college grads, for everybody right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the unemployment rate for young adults 20 to 24 is nearly 16%. And for men, it's 18%.
Oh, my.
Yeah, so this gets to, this gets right to the heart of it. It really hurts young adults,
yes.
Especially as older workers are hanging on to their jobs now that their retirement is more elusive. We were all hit hard in our stock portfolios and in our pensions and savings accounts when the housing bust and this recession hit, and now older workers are hanging on much longer to their jobs, and that means fewer young adults are getting their foot on that escalator.
Boyd in Milwaukee is next. Hi, Boyd.
Good morning, Kathleen. Hello to your guest. Really good show. You know, there was a book that I read a few months ago, I'll try and get to the point quickly, How Lincoln Learned to Read. And I thought the intro was really good because it's hit home to me. You know, I have a college degree, and then I went back to get some job skills. I was going to go into graphic design, commercial art, but that field, literally in the past 2 years, is changing dramatically. Everything is going online. And I think actually in Milwaukee, a lot of the ad agencies you see in the Third Ward, I think in 10 years from now, are probably going to be out of business. I know some of them are already pulling up stakes. But really the point that I wanted to get is that the book talked about in the introduction is education is important, but how do you, when you go to school, you know, do you educate yourself for the sake, you know, of, you know, knowledge and what have you, and try to get a broad-based education? And then there's the education which will, I guess you can say, apply to, you know, practical purposes. For me, I do have a solid job, security now, but it's not what I went to school for, pardon me, and I am, though, outside of my work, going to try and still make some inroads in medical design, which is close to what I went to school for. But how do you think the distinction between just the broad-based education, intellectual curiosity, and for practical purposes?
Good question.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a small group of young people who are really, really interested in that broad liberal arts education. They're, you know, they've loved school all their life. And for them, that might be a lovely 4 years, 5 years to explore and to expand their horizons and to read and really become a, you know, well-rounded person. For a lot of other young adults, they are looking at college as a route to a job. And with the cost of college today, I think it's key to be more strategic. And being strategic in this case means looking at calling up people and finding out where the jobs are going to be, or looking at the, you know, the government statistics, the government projections of where our economy is going. So green technologies, science and engineering, there's a lot of middle-tier jobs that are growing. And precision manufacturing, for example, nursing, the healthcare field, all of these, there are growth industries. And I think if I was a young adult today starting out, I would look to where the jobs are going to be, and I would train for those jobs. And I wouldn't necessarily go to a four-year school to do it. If I could do it in a two-year technical school that gave me really solid skills and had a good reputation, I would consider that a really viable option.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Boyd, so much for the call. Let's go next to David from South Milwaukee. Hi, David.
Hi, Kathleen. Super important issue, and your guest, and thank you to your guest and you for just discussing this. A ray of hope. My daughter is now a freshman in college. She went to school in South Milwaukee, in an industrial suburb. A nice city. And from third grade on, she was given guidance as to why she was in school and where she might be going, always age appropriate. She was tested at least a couple times for her interests and her aptitudes. Those reports came home. And kind of an interesting aside to this, I could be walking my dog and standing on the corner talking to other parents that my daughter went through school with, and they'll say, "Nah, this kid's got no guidance in school, you know, and why didn't we do this?" And I said, "Well, actually, starting in third grade, the guidance counselors would come in. They were multiply tested. It's been a theme of our educational system that kids who know where they're going are more likely to get there. We're spending scarce public dollars. We need to do it on purpose and for a reason." And, you know, and sure, with my daughter, a volunteer program, a short internship, all coordinated through her high school. Wonderful.
Great.
There are things going well out there. And, you know, your comments and the whole discussion, just super. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, David, very much for the call. I think his daughter's experience, though, is not real common, is it?
It's common in families that are themselves often have college degrees or often have, you know, good jobs. It is less common in families who themselves didn't go to college or who are struggling to find their own way in the job market. Because, you know, families are overtaxed and overstressed, and it's difficult to, when you can't make ends meet, it's difficult to always be, you know, on top of everything. So that's where I think mentors in school and Big Brother, Big Sister, all those programs that can help guide kids in their decisions and help kids find out what they like, what their passion is. He said something that was really good, that if you know where you're going, you're more likely to get there. That is so true. I mean, I think we have to do a better job for everyone in school and in after school and out of school to help these help kids understand where they want to go.
Right. Well, he seemed to indicate, at least how I was hearing him, that his daughter had this kind of guidance from the school, too, for all of those years. Is that common?
I'm not certain it's common. I think he must be in a good school system.
Right.
I mean, in good school systems, guidance counselors have lower caseloads. They focus more on the steps to get to college. You know, the public schools in the cities and the public schools in larger districts that are overtaxed, you know, they don't have the resources to spend that kind of time and that kind of care on each kid.
Right. Thank you, David, so much for the call. Best of luck to your daughter, Camille, in Frankfort, Michigan. Hi.
Hi. Thank you. My education taught me a couple of things that have served me well for the rest of my life. And what I'm seeing today are a lot of kids who are very determined at what they want to do, and it doesn't require going to college, and so they go off on in those directions, and that's fine. But if you aren't that type of person who really knows what you want to do, you're not going to lose anything. In most cases, you won't even lose a scholarship by taking a year off and doing something outside the classroom before you go to school to give yourself a chance to not only think about what you might want to do, but expose yourself to some other things, especially if you can travel. It doesn't have to take a lot of money. It can be something where you are a volunteer and you get to travel that way and get some other perspective. But once you go to school, if you decide to go to school, the other thing that is so important is you need to learn how to ask questions. When I don't mean in the classroom, I mean of counselors, of people who have been in a particular area for a while, of other, maybe even grad students. When I was in school, I didn't have anybody else to, you know, help me. I had to do it all myself. And my counselors were, my advisor even, were people who were, you know, they had different perspectives, and they were often giving me answers that were allied with their particular area of familiarity.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to understand, you have to ask questions, and you have to understand who is it who's answering that question and try to get a wider perspective on where you might be heading.
Barbara.
Yeah, I agree. The Camille, I think it was,
said
this, you know, taking a year off is a good idea for a lot of kids. And there are opportunities out there to make that year off very productive and very eye-opening and very a time to mature. Service learning, AmeriCorps, the Peace Corps, there are many opportunities out there to for young adults to give back to their community. And this generation is very committed to giving back to their community. They are a huge group of volunteers, and they are very devoted to social justice issues, and especially at the community level. So I think a year of service
it would be great if we could mandate that, but of course we can't. But, you know, the military is another option for many young adults, and that is the ultimate service. But these years, these gap years, they allow young adults to grow and mature. And with maturity, I think then you begin to know how to ask those questions and to understand who you are and what it is that, you know, sparks your passion. So I think it's a great idea to take a year off. And some of these programs, if you serve for a year, you get a stipend then for college, which is, you know, perfect.
Right. Thanks, Camille. Mike in Madison. Oops, sorry. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Mike.
I'm sorry, but I have to disagree with your guest about higher education. I'm in a technical school right now in Madison, Wisconsin, and I'm paying four-year college tuition for something I can't even transfer to a four-year college. I'm not getting what I'm paying for. That's the problem with this education system. And the other problem with the education system is they're so backwashed with all the information they're providing to everyone that it's hard to even find any true information out there. Once you get into the system, it's even harder to get any answers.
What are you studying, Mike? You're at a tech school now?
Yes.
And what aren't you getting that you're paying for?
All my supposed transfer credits that go to a four-year college, the four-year college doesn't even accept. The curriculums for these state-run schools for the Wisconsin Technical Program need to get caught up on the curriculums and get approved.
So you,
I see. Technical board.
So you're wanting to transfer?
Correct.
Okay. Barbara.
Yeah, that's we heard that quite a bit. Unfortunately, the you know, it's hard to know going in what will transfer and what won't. And you know, we did hear that frequently. There's a mismatch there somehow between programs and the four-year programs. I mean, they are working on that to make that transition more. Make it smoother and more effective, but it is a problem. That said, I think a technical school for many young people is a good choice. Like anything, you have to do your research and you have to really find the right fit for what it is you want to do. And there, it never hurts to talk to, if you want to be an electrician or you want to be a nurse. You know, a nurse or a phlebotomist, it doesn't hurt to go to those people who are working in the field and say, how did you get here? What do I need to do before you jump into school and you know, waste time and money?
Mm-hmm. And, Mike, what were you studying and what do you want to study?
Well, I wanted to transfer to UW for legal studies.
Uh-huh.
But none of my classes can transfer because the technical college changed the transfer arrangements with UW.
I see.
And increased the curriculum and also didn't grandfather in the original program for liberal arts.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also a small business owner, and that's the other part of me that gets mad about these technical colleges is that the technical colleges aren't teaching what the small business owner wants.
Yes, that's. I can jump in there. I think there is a mismatch in some states and in some systems. They are working very hard now to match what it is the local employers need with what the community colleges and the technical schools are teaching. So you know that is beginning to change, but it is still often a mismatch.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Mike, for your call. Barbara Ray is our guest, co-author of Not Quite Adults, Why 20-somethings Are Choosing a Slower Path to Adulthood and Why It's Good for Everyone. 800-486-8655. One line is open right now if you'd like to get it. And if you can't get through, we've been busy, you can use email, and we'll get to some of those right after we pause. That is talk@WPR.org. A reminder, the State of the Union address is tonight, and it will be carried here on the Ideas Network at 8 o'clock. The Republican response from Congressman Paul Ryan will also be carried, and we'll be doing a lot of analysis on various talk shows tomorrow. We will be with you at 9 with David Frum, former speechwriter for President George W. Bush, and Don Gagne, NPR's national political correspondent. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to an email. Here's an email that's come in from Bill from Wausau. Please comment on differences you've observed between young males and females in their delayed transitions.
Oh, yes. Well, young men are struggling, to be honest. Young women are, you know, in a knowledge economy where education is central, young women, girls tend to do better in school early on and latch into school and enjoy school more. So they are doing, they are graduating, earning more BAs than men. They are, in some cities, major cities, they are earning more than men for the first time. And most recently, I think I read that the payoff to marriage, where it used to benefit women more, it is now benefiting men more. So men have taken a hit. Their wage for a high school graduate with just a high school degree, the wages have stagnated. They've dropped, 35% since the 70s, adjusted for inflation. So, you know, and for the first time, young men are likely to be less educated than their parents. So it is nobody has really zeroed down and figured out what it is, what is causing all this. But, you know, it's a combination of a shifting job force, a higher demand for education, and where you just can't go from high school to a career in a, you know, on the factory floor that men used to rely on. And so all of these things have slowly accumulated and really taken their toll on men. The unemployment rate is higher for men. It's just tough out there for guys. Mm-hmm.
Cal in Milwaukee. Hi.
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 I'm interested in the fact that you haven't talked about the issue of pace of change in your discussion so far, because it seems to me that when you look at trying to plan for something, the pace of change is so rapid now that it's much more difficult for any student to responsibly plan for a future when you don't know what's going to happen in the occupational area during that period of time. And I also disagree with your caller or your speaker in terms of the people who get the degree and then they have to sit out, like you're the chemical engineer, because of the principle of juniority. In technical areas, the junior person is the more likely hired. So the longer you're out, the more likely somebody is to come in after you and actually get the job, because you become obsolete. Mm-hmm. And that's all relates to this pace of change, which is huge.
Right. That's an interesting point. Barbara.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is an interesting point. Things do change, it seems, exponentially faster today. This generation is very comfortable with fast change. They've grown up with it. They are used to it. And they don't see it as threatening or frightening, which is a good thing. I do think, as far as planning for careers and planning for your future, there are certain skill sets that you can use across different industries that will always come in handy. And, in fact, you know, most people today say we have to continually re-educate ourselves for new jobs, because we won't be holding the same job for our entire life ever again.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're constantly retooling, and which is part of this fast-paced change. And young adults are aware of that. They know how to do that. Whether you can plan for the long term, I don't think so, but I think you can develop a set of skills that will take you places, you know, regardless of the job. And those skills include critical thinking, strategic thinking, you know, good solid math and science skills, just a good base. And with that, I think you can, you know, land pretty securely.
Thanks, Cal, for the call. Ellen in Milwaukee. Hi.
Well, hello there. I just am... I'm going to talk a little more about that young man that called about the technical colleges. It is very true, and it has been true forever. I mean, you take English 1 at the technical college, and it won't transfer to UWM.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been going on for 30 years. It's not getting fixed. It's just going nowhere. And I think that the system should work better together instead of being so, I don't know, competitive. I think that the UW system just wants you to take it all over again so they can get their piece of the pie, and which I think is wrong. Secondly, why isn't somebody going into the schools and talking to kids? These aren't all college. Every kid in the world isn't, you know, ready to go to college, and maybe a technical school, yes, but maybe some guidance into the things that, you know, are really, really useful, like being an electrician, fixing diesel trucks. I mean, these jobs aren't going away.
All right. How do we let people know about those jobs, Barbara?
Well, I think we have to start earlier than, you know, your senior year in high school. I think we have to start junior high, you know, start thinking about what it is kids like, what drives them, where they want to go. And if they want to be an engineer or an electrician, or, and these are very good jobs. You know, I think we also have to stop thinking that electricians and firemen and all these middle-tier jobs are somehow lesser jobs, that, you know, you're a failure if this is what you want to do. We've kind of created an environment where, you know, everybody has to excel at, you know, these flashy jobs, and in the financial sector or you know, those jobs we always hear about making millions and this and that. But there's a large tier of really good jobs that that we should be holding up as options for kids, and viable options, and options to be proud of if you're working as an electrician. Because, like the caller said, those jobs aren't going anywhere. You know, if you're an electrician or anything that's hands-on, face-to-face, those jobs will stay here, and those jobs will continue to be needed. So I think we have to first raise the value of those jobs in our society, and then we have to show kids how to get to those jobs,
mm-hmm.
and what they mean, and what they, you know, what they entail, and what skills you need, and start connecting their math class to the the job they'll finally end up doing. And now, of course, kids will change their mind a million times, but at least you get them connected to school in a way that is valuable to them and makes sense to them, and that way they'll stay connected to school more. They'll be more likely to stay connected to school. So, you know, I do think we have to try to figure out a better way to do this. And there are some models out there, like the Career Academy I mentioned before, that
yes.
are working on this. And but more needs to be done, definitely.
Ellen, thank you. We have about a minute left, one and all. Larry from Cleveland, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. Just a quick comment. I think there's a great myth out there in the value of education. I have three college-educated children. One has a PhD. Took her 2 years to find a job at St. Jude Hospital in Memphis, working with cancer patients for under $50,000. Recently, there was an article in the Madison paper, 7 bus drivers make over $100,000 a year. One's bonus was $70,000 last year. He can retire at 55 with over $100,000 pension. So I think we have a big myth, and the next big financial crisis is going to be the defaulting of college loans.
over $1 trillion.
Barbara.
Yeah, there's, you know, the cost of college is going to be a conversation we're going to have for years to come because it is getting high. It is getting very high, especially for families in the middle class and below. It's becoming, you know, it's just becoming out of reach.
Yes.
And that's not good. And, you know, with this recession, we're hearing the underemployed, the PhD who's, you know, not making as much as they thought they would. And that is a real problem. And here again, I think, you know, we've held up the four-year degree and the higher education to a point that we've excluded in that conversation these very good middle-tier jobs and how to get there, the community colleges and the technical schools, mm-hmm. the good ones.
On that note, we have to say goodbye, Barbara. We're out of time. Thank you so much for being with us and for the valuable book. And the book is Not Quite Adults, Why 20-somethings Are Choosing a Slower Path to Adulthood and Why It's Good for Everyone. Our guest, Barbara Ray, this hour of the program. And thank you, everybody, for all of your calls and your interest. Remember, the State of the Union will be on the Ideas Network tonight.